Well, I'm glad that Andrew said God is in charge. And let's hope he is in charge today. I'm going to, I think, disappoint everybody because I'm not going to talk about the referendum at all. And I'm not going to use citizenship in its highest form. I was thinking in the car coming this morning, I'm probably just being so bland, and I'm talking about Christians in society, because that's what citizens are. Citizens I'm taking as members of a community. Citizens as people working together in a society. So let's see how it goes anyway. So my next slide shows what a society is. We all started as hunter-gatherers. I would go and rake out the food I could find for my needs. And everybody was doing the same thing. And then eventually people came together. It's not very long in society before you see skills appearing. In ancient Egypt, they became very, very skilled in certain things, just to take an example. So that meant that they were freeing up part of the society. They didn't need to go and hunt for food. They could concentrate on their skills. And that's the kind of complex society we live in. And this is an example of it here. I was recently, a wee while ago, I went with the school to Normandy on a transitus trip. And one of the tasks, which you probably have done in lots of outdoor centres, was to make a raft. You had to make your own society. You were given barrels and wood and rope, and you had to build a raft. And you could watch them. It was great fun. You watched them and you saw the ones who formed a good society. There would be somebody who would be thinking, right, if we do this, we do this. And they made a good raft that they floated, and they sat on it just like this lot here, and it floated. The group I was with had no such organisation, no such leader, and it ended up with two or three of them sitting on lonely barrels in the loch, in the lake. In France, it wouldn't be a loch. Sitting on these lonely barrels, and the rest of them at the side, it was just pathetic. That's what good society is, working together. This is just a light introduction to what a society is. My next slide shows San Gimignano in Italy. Look at all these towers. Now, that wasn't a society that worked together properly. It was a society where somebody was rich and wanted to show it and built a tower. Somebody else was rich and wanted to show it and built a tower. And it ended up with my tower is higher than your tower, and one person built two towers, so I'm far better than anybody else. And the whole thing is not united in any way. Unlike Athens, the next slide. You see the difference? Athens was built round the temple area, the Acropolis. The city grew up round that. There's a single kind of thing in it. And the next slide I put in York, because that was the same. You've got the Minster and the city growing round it. But unfortunately, when I was thinking of York, I thought, yes, but that society was fractured, weakened by things like the Wars of the Roses. And so York gives us the idea of the raft slightly falling apart at times. But we build a society as best we can. So then I went on to think about, well, what our task is in a good society. We want to be good citizens, Christian citizens in this society, and build it up. So I've taken Joseph in the Old Testament and used him as my example of a good citizen. The first one, well, before that, I've got the things that a citizen needs to think about. Am I on that one? Yes, there they are. Care, morality, environment, financial responsibility, behaviour. You're probably thinking of other ones, but these are just ones I came up with. So next one, I started with Joseph. And this applies to all of us. We need to be careful with our money and our finances. Genesis chapter 39 and verse 4. Joseph, he was a slave. Remember, he'd been bought by Potiphar. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. Joseph, was careful with other people's money, careful so much so that Pharaoh entrusted him with it. Finance, good citizenship. Zacchaeus, Jesus must have spent ages with Zacchaeus because he came out and he had all of this worked out. And he said, I was actually amazed when I read this, here and now I give half my possessions to the poor and then I'm giving back what I've cheated people out of. That is what citizenship is all about, caring for the poor, not cheating other people. Next one is morality. There is poor old Joseph, and Potiphar's wife says to him, come to bed with me. And Joseph says, my master has withheld nothing from me, except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? Interesting, against God. Morality, spoiling society, not just hurting the people in society, but sinning against God. Environment. And I rather liked the idea of Joseph as a carer of the environment. Joseph knew there was famine coming, so he got busy and he kept things, stored them up and made sure that there wasn't famine when the years of famine came. Here's Joseph looking after things in the environment, storing up the food for a rainy day. The environment. I was thinking in terms of that. You get that in the New Testament as well. After the feeding of the 5,000, what did they do? They picked up all the scraps, and there were 12 baskets full. They didn't just throw them away. After that picnic with the 12,000, it wasn't like Balado after tea in the park. Everything was picked up and put in baskets. Caring for the environment is good citizenship. And care of other people. Joseph, it says in chapter 40 of Genesis, all the countries came to Egypt. Joseph is feeding the countries round about. They were paying for it, certainly, but he was caring for them. And then when his brothers came, and I thought this picture was Joseph meeting one of his brothers, he forgave them and he said to them, it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. Care. Caring for things, caring for people. And the last one from the Joseph one is responsible behavior. Let me read you Genesis 41. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall have charge of all my palace. Responsible behavior. Well, these are some ideas what a citizen Joseph was, in my sense of the word. None of us can really quite match up to that kind of thing as a slave, to act in the way he did. But there's a high standard of citizenship. However, how many people do we know who are good citizens, but they haven't got Christian attached to them? And I'm coming to that later on. I moved into the New Testament then, and the next slide I was thinking about attitudes to authority. Now, Joseph submitted to his master, he honoured his master, but we're into the New Testament. And we're talking, in Romans 13, Paul is talking about authority. Now, you're going to say Paul hadn't had bad experiences of authorities, and he hadn't. Everything wasn't quite so bad for Paul in the New Testament at that time. And he says, let everyone be subject to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Consequently, whoever rebels against authority is rebelling against what God has instituted. The next slide says, for the one in authority is God's servant for your good. If you do wrong, be afraid, for rulers do not bear the sword for no reason. They are God's servants. Why is Paul so subservient to a set of rulers who were appalling at times? Well, I put a wee bit in and thinking about this. Funnily enough, it harks back to what we were talking about, what Andrew was mentioning. What was Jesus labelled by Pilate? He was labelled King of the Jews. That's what Jesus was labelled. That was the only way, if Pilate is keeping a record, if the Roman Empire is keeping a record of why was Jesus killed, the only way they could justify it was by saying he didn't honour Caesar, he made himself out to be king. The Romans wouldn't have killed Jesus for any other reason, for immorality or anything at all like that. King of the Jews, no, he was crucified. And that is why Pilate put "he is King of the Jews" on the cross. It was his get-out clause. That's why there's all this question about, are you a king? It was Pilate's way of saying, yeah, well, that satisfies Caesar. He had to go. And then Acts chapter 17, this is Paul and Silas in Thessalonica. What did they try to stir up the trouble with? They said, these men who have caused trouble, they are defying Caesar's decrees. Nothing else about what they had done, they are defying Caesar's decrees. So you see what Paul is saying here. Be very careful about the authorities. Keep in with the authorities. If necessary, suck up to the authorities, because that is the one thing that will prevent you from spreading the gospel. Paul is very careful, I wrote down here, Paul is very careful to emphasize attitudes to authority so that there is no reason to hamper the spread of the gospel. And the next slide, he's on talking about taxes. This is why you pay taxes. For the authorities are God's servants who give their full time to governing. Give to everyone what you owe them. If you owe taxes, pay taxes. And Jesus, of course, had said in the New Testament, when he was there, he said, give to Caesar what is Caesar's, in Matthew chapter 22. So don't annoy the authorities by not acknowledging their authority, by not paying their taxes. Pay taxes, be honest, be honourable, and spread the gospel. Peter's no different. My next slide, I went to Peter and I found the same thing in Peter. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether to the emperor as the supreme authority or to governors. So submit yourselves to the authorities. Show proper respect to everyone. Love the family of believers. Fear God. Honour the emperor. It's the same kind of theme coming through. But Peter then says, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you for the reason for the hope that you have. Do this with gentleness and respect. Now, he is saying more or less, don't badger people. Don't harass them. Don't shout at them. Don't put them down. Don't patronise them. Don't be a hypocrite and shout down the opposition. Gentleness and respect, respecting the authorities. So there, that comes through very, very clearly in the New Testament. But, there are but coming in. Next one. In Acts chapter 5 and 29, Peter says to the Sanhedrin, we must obey God rather than men. Behaviour, yes. Respect for authority, yes. Paying your taxes, yes. But worshipping God is not negotiable. You worship God, that is important. Bowing down to the emperor, no. And I put next in here Polycarp. He's one of my favourite characters ancient times. And Polycarp, he was eventually burned for his faith. Polycarp was the bishop of Ephesus. And Polycarp wrote and said, pray for all God's people. Pray too for our sovereign lords and for all governors and rulers. Okay, there's what he wrote. Shortly after that, here we are, somebody writing about the martyrdom of Polycarp. The governor, however, still went on pressing him. Take the oath and I will let you go. Revile your Christ. Polycarp's reply was, 86 years have I served him, and he has done me no wrong. How then can I blaspheme my king and my saviour? My king? That was enough. That got Polycarp straight to the arena, and then they burnt him. So there's the story of Polycarp. Authority, yes, but when it came to honouring Jesus, he came first. Then I mentioned Clement, another of the people who were writing in ancient times. Clement lived through Nero's opposition. He lived through Domitian's persecution of the Christians, but he produced a prayer where people had to pray for rulers who have received power over earthly things from God, that they may administer in peace and gentleness the authority given to them. These early Christians took very seriously the idea that you submit to the authorities. And F.F. Bruce wrote, "Christians will voice their no to Caesar's unauthorized demands more effectively if they have shown themselves ready to obey authorized demands." All right. So that's authority and our attitude to authority. Then I came on to another idea. I hope you're following me. My thoughts were a bit all over the place with this. But I came to another idea about Christians, though. What about Christians? We should speak out against injustice. We're not just to submit to authorities and only speak about Jesus. We ought to be speaking out against injustice, and of course we should. Gently, respectfully. Wilberforce, I took that example. Wilberforce became a Christian and headed a parliamentary campaign that ended in the Slave Trade Act in 1807. Fought for the anti-slavery campaign. Bonhoeffer fought against the Nazis, spoke out against the euthanasia and the genocide of the Jews. Bonhoeffer ended up, in a concentration camp, dying. And I was on holiday last year in Munich, and I went into a church and found a wee booklet. It was about that, a Jesuit, that's the word I was looking for, a Jesuit, Father Rupert Mayer. And he spoke out against the regime. He went to a concentration camp because he didn't like what was happening. He spoke out against it. And he died not in the concentration camp, but his health was so damaged, he died shortly afterwards. So there's Father Rupert Mayer. We have plenty. You'll be thinking of other examples yourselves of people who have spoken out. Christians do need to speak out against injustices in our society. Next thing I came to was my thoughts about Christians and the needy. And Christians need to be involved in that as well. We have to speak out about the needy. In classical times, the poor didn't exist. The poor were invisible. I've got up there a wee thing that I wrote down. Christians invented the poor. Before that, they were invisible. The Bible, in fact, talks about a class of people that aren't mentioned elsewhere. You don't read about the poor in other kinds of literature. The money that is talked about in the Bible is such tiny amounts, the money of the poor, the food of the poor. The Bible is all about the poor and where the poor were in society. It talks about them. In classical times, they did give money, but it was part of your civic duty, and it was a wealthy person who did it. And why did they do it? To get votes, to get people to vote for them in elections, to get all of these kind of things to, pay me back. You vote for me, I will give money. That was the way they treated the poor. But the Christians invented the poor, and they became visible. I work sometimes with the Trussell Trust. I was there on Friday afternoon, and the Trussell Trust say, this is the verse that they have, "I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me." And the Trussell Trust say, well, of course there are scroungers out there. Of course there are people who will come in and they're only playing the system and all that. That doesn't mean to say you don't do it. That doesn't mean to say you don't feed the hungry who are hungry, and there are people coming who are genuinely in need. And the interesting thing is, the place where I work with the food bank, a number of the people have come along and their lives have been turned around because they have realised that there's Jesus. That is the good thing that has come out of that. And Julian the Apostate. Now, after Constantine, there was a Roman emperor called Julian. And Julian the Apostate was Constantine's nephew, and he wanted to reverse all of this Christianity that Constantine had allowed. And Julian was absolutely incensed. Why? Because he couldn't turn people away from Christianity because the Christians were helping the needy, and he says, including the pagans. The Christians were helping the poor pagans too. And he was raging at that Galilean who had turned the world upside down. So helping the needy is a good thing. It's necessary, it's needy, it's needed, and Christians have to be involved in that. Now I came to the next one, and I found this one quite difficult. I hope you'll bear with me. Christians are the salt of the earth. So what do Christians do as the salt of the earth? Crush the infidels, crush the immoral, change society, like the Crusaders set out to do. Here's a Livonian knight. Livonia was Estonia. That was where it was, Latvia and Estonia, and the Crusaders even went there. The Crusaders were crushing society from the top down. Make people, change people from the top down. Do you know, bear with me on this one too. I think the gay campaign is doing the same thing. I'm not comfortable with gay marriage cards on the table. However, what are we doing now? We are trying from the top down to crush society, to impose our will on society, and we cannot do that. Treat people with respect and honour them, says Peter in the Bible. We cannot do that. We cannot be graceless and strident. We have to work from the bottom of society up through society. And we cannot use laws to make people. We cannot use laws to make people who don't belong to our faith change their ways. Grace, then, as I was working my way through this, grace came to me as the most important thing in society. No strident campaigning, no graceless campaigning, no shouting the opposition down. Grace. So, my next slide is entitled Grace, and a few ideas about grace. Become involved in politics? Yes. Fight against corruption, child trafficking, drugs, poverty? Yes. Uphold morals? Yes, but show grace and love. Jesus, thinking about Jesus, he resisted the temptation to have all authority. Up on the time when he was tempted, he was told, I will give you all the power in the world, and Jesus resisted that temptation. He could have called 10,000 angels, but he resisted that temptation. Let's not go the way of power, 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 and making people do things. We have to work quietly from the bottom. Francis Schaeffer, when I was young, got involved in the political arena and was calling people, Christians, to get more involved in the political arena, and he was right. But then he wrote a book called The Mark of a Christian, which said, look, hold back, hold back. Show grace. Show love. Don't shout down the opposition. And that was exactly the same thing. He says, the state cannot impose the Christian faith. It should be seen in Christians. And then I came back to Paul. Paul, interestingly enough, had nothing to say about the scandalous immorality that was all around him. Slavery, gladiator fights, the exposure of unwanted babies. That was common if you didn't want the child. Plenty of writing about that. Emperors involved. My big one is incest. I find that one really horrendous. Nero, the whole lot of them involved in incest. Paul says not one word about that. He says plenty to the church to sort themselves out and keep themselves right, but not to the authorities. We work from the bottom up. We work through individuals and so change the world. That was the way Paul wanted things to be. And my next slide is just a wee quote from Romans. I'm coming towards the end. You'll be glad to know. Romans 13. Let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another. And then verse 10, the end of this. Love does no harm to a neighbour. Therefore, love is the fulfilment of the law. So, next slide shows what I was thinking as I came through this citizenship thing. The early Christians changed society from the bottom up. They worked with the poor, the needy, slaves, got plenty of records of that, women, fellow soldiers, fellow sailors. You've got Paul on the boat, they're working with these guys. How many of these guys went out and began to change their own societies, and so it went through. Rarely do we see them working with the lawgivers, the senators, the emperors, although you're going to tell me Paul did meet high up people and all the rest of it. Next slide says what Philip Yancey says: grace is the main distinctive that Christians have to offer. Grace. So we're starting at the very bottom, and the next slide shows a grain of mustard seed. A Christian citizen shouldn't use politics to force people from the top. We should be planting these tiny grains of mustard seed around. And for goodness sake, this week we're going to need grace, aren't we? Plenty of grace. Changing things from the bottom up. And the next slide. This is a ring. This is a Roman ring. I was a few weeks ago, went to Bishop Auckland, especially because the archaeologists have been busy down there digging up a Roman fort, Binchester Roman fort. And they found this Roman ring. And this ring, there is no doubt at all about it, has a Christian symbol on it. It's not, it might have. When they find things with crosses on them, they don't know if that's a Christian symbol or not, because crosses could be anything. But this has got an anchor on it and two fish. And from plenty of other sources, this is known to be a Christian symbol, a Christian ring. The other interesting thing is, it's the earliest sign of Christianity that far north in Britain. It was 2nd century, that is 100 and something AD. They know that from the design and so on of the ring. 100 and something AD, that far north in Britain. Christian ring. And I'm quoting from the archaeologists from Durham University. They are amazed. It was found in a military context. It was found in a Roman fort. And you know, I like that. Christianity coming through Europe, the mustard seed sown, and it's passing on its way. Where did the soldier who dropped that ring, where did this come from? He had heard, he's bringing Christianity, he's bringing ideas of Christianity that far north in Britain. It's not one of the high and mighty church rulers coming across. It's not Constantine, it's before Constantine. This is when Christianity was not yet allowed, really. He's way before that. And he's brought his Christian ring as far north as Bishop Auckland. Well, who knows what the archaeologists will find at Hadrian's Wall yet. So, I love this idea of Christians in society working from the bottom up through that. And I was thinking of young folk. My days as a citizen are now going down the way. I've now retired and I'm on the slippery slope. No, I hope not. But I'm on the way. there are young folk here and people here who are at the top of the tree or are climbing up and are going to be citizens and are wanting to see society changed. are wanting to see the church changed and good on them. Let's change things. You go out and change the world. Change the hypocrisy, the gracelessness of the church, the gracelessness of many Christians, and change it round to show grace and love and kindness. Billy Graham went to Russia when I was much younger. I remember he went to see Brezhnev, and he spent time with Brezhnev, and he treated Brezhnev well. He treated him with respect. And Christians, especially in America, were incensed. And they said, why? Why did he treat Brezhnev so well? Did he not tell Brezhnev, get the human rights issues sorted out? How are you treating people? How are Christians in Russia being? Did you not give Brezhnev a piece of your mind about that? You've turned the Christian church back 50 years, they said to Billy Graham. And Billy Graham said, I am deeply ashamed. I had hoped to turn back the Christian church 2,000 years. That's what we have to do. Go back to the days when we are working, planting the grains of mustard seed in respect. Let's pray. Our Heavenly Father, thank you that you are over all things, and in you all things hold together. Thank you that you have given us your word to look at and to see the principles we have to live our lives by. Thank you that you loved us enough to become King of the Jews. I pray to you, Lord, that you will be with us all this week. Be with the young people, be with the citizens of tomorrow, be with us all as we seek to plant these grains of mustard seed. Give us grace and love in your name.